welcome to episode 90, the final episode.
It's the final countdown.
You done?
No.
Okay. Of the Exosequential podcast, hosted by me, Mladen, and Chris, who you just heard singing joyfully. I think he's glad to be rid of me, frankly.
No, an excuse to sing 80s pop is an excuse I will relish with.
And one we've returned to in many episodes before this one. I'm sure I've heard you sing all sorts of 80s pop songs. You've sang Hold Me Closer, Tony Danza. You've sung... I remember that one fondly.
Who could forget such classics as Just in Time for Mother's Day, Chris Baber's ultimate hit. No. So, yes, this is our last show, the Extra Sequential show. That is Mladen, who was... assaulting your eardrums, and my name is Chris. And, after 2.5 years, we started in August 2010 at a little flat in Northbridge.
Mm.
And, we just kind of, I don't know, why did we start? It was your idea, I believe.
It was my stupid idea, and then I was too stubborn to just stop.
No, it's a good idea. We've had a lot of fun, but...
Yeah, I feel like I've improved at my public speaking, my... Call center KPIs have gone through the roof.
I can imagine.
Yes. And, it's been fun chatting comics. And for this last show, I think we're just going to keep it loose and fun, reminisce on stuff, talk about comics that we haven't had a chance to talk about for whatever reason over the many different topics we've done. There's some we still haven't mentioned, which is crazy.
Yeah, we had a huge list, but... We'll never get to all of them, but I think this is 90 is a nice round number to finish things off. So, and we've both got creative aspirations outside of this humble podcast.
That's right.
So, let's get to the news.
Let's do that. Christopher, you told me you had some news. Tell me some news, some good news.
Joss Whedon's Cabin in the Woods film, which has got a huge, like 98% successful rating. The critics just love to see the guy obviously behind Buffy and. Yep. Serenity, Firefly, and The Avengers, which is currently steaming up the screen at a Cinemaplex near you. Mm-hmm. So Cabin in the Woods is his kind of unique horror take, and it's scoring a limited theatrical season in both Sydney and Melbourne starting the 14th of June. Originally, it wasn't going to get released theatrically in Australia, which is very annoying, but now it is. So Melbourne's Cinema Nova, is that anywhere near you, Mladen?
Never heard of it, but it probably is right next door, and I just have no idea.
Just a kebab shop. And Sydney's Cheval. So that's from the June 14th. And if you just look at the Cabin in the Woods official blog, you'll find all the details. Sticking with films, the Dark Knight Rises trailer has obviously just been released.
Mm-hmm.
You watched it?
I did. I hadn't planned to, and then I ended up seeing it just because if I've already decided to see a film, why would I keep watching trailers? Do you know what I mean? That's just spoiling more of the film for me. But I thought, okay, I'll have a look.
Yeah, there's not too much excitement, really. Yeah, it is. It seems very dreary and depressing, but nevertheless. On the flip side of that is another new trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man, which also opens in July, the same month Dark Knight Rises.
And that I did not see. How was that?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's more, brighter and fun, and Spider-Man's quite quippy and witty and whippy and webby. So it looks more like the comics version of Spider-Man. So, yeah, and also, of course, the Expendables 2 trailer has just been released. Oh, yeah, featuring Chuck Norris and Jean-Claude Van Damme as the bad guy.
That's such a great idea. It's a great idea and concept, so poor in execution. I'm sorry. The first Expendables film. Yeah.
I'm a big Stallone fan. And 80s action.
I like Stallone a lot as well, like genuinely, not just laughingly. I really like the Rocky movies and the first Rambo film probably. And I love Stop or My Mum Will Shoot.
I don't think I've ever seen that. It's probably the only film of his I haven't seen.
Estelle Getty plays his mom. It's amazing.
From the Golden Girls. Mark Waid, writer Mark Waid and Peter Krause, who worked together on Irredeemable World Boom Studios. Supervillain in a Redeemable series has just launched, Mark Waid has just launched his Thrillbent website with a weekly schedule, and Waid describes Thrillbent as the result of a belief that comics can and will be a thriving mass medium and in the digital age if they're created for modern media devices and not exclusively for printed pamphlets that are overpriced, uninviting to new readers and abominably distributed in only a relative handful of storefronts nationwide. So yeah. Mark Waid is one of the most, I thought you'd agree with that, cherished and successful comic writers. He's written every character you can think of. He's really going digital all out these days. So the current one, Insufferable, that he's working on with Peter Krause, is about what happens when a superhero's sidekick grows up to become an arrogant son of a gun and what kind of happens to bring them back together. So you can start reading that now.
Great. Is Son of a Gun your choice of words or his?
That's mine.
Yeah. I thought Mark Waid would have a better way of words than that.
I'm polite.
I'm trying to get the boot in on the last episode of the Exosuggestion podcast. One upcoming announcement, which I thought was, I'd completely forgotten. And when I heard about it, I was like, finally, Charles Burns's follow-up to 2010's, Crossed Out or X'd Out, depending on how you pronounce it. The, Tintin inspired LSD, fueled hallucinogenic trip. The follow-up's called The Hive, and it's going to be released in October. So, finally, because I really enjoyed that book when it came out then, and I can't believe I'd forgotten about it. I feel kind of bad.
So, what's The Hive about?
At the end of Crossed Out, he descended into The Hive at some point. No, he'd gone into that weird world, and I've forgotten. It's been so long since I've read it now. 2 years, Chris. You know what happens in 2 years?
Oh, at least 24 months.
Yeah. Small African countries become democracies and then dictatorships again. It's true. You know, a lot can happen in 2 years.
Various Kardashians change their marital status.
Several times. Yeah. All right.
That's all the news.
Yeah. I mean, besides Free Comic Book Day now.
Yes.
That's because this episode is being recorded right on Free Comic Book Day, Chris. And I think our experiences between Perth and Melbourne probably differed somewhat for Free Comic Book Day. So where did you go? What did you do? What do you think?
I went to the new Comic Zone store. I went there like 9:30 because I had a few minutes before I was meeting someone, but they were just flat out. So I came back again and again, they were still flat out, which is awesome to see. A few people brought their kids and dressed up. So they're at the new location. And yeah, it was awesome. And I also went to Quality Comics, which are flat out as well. And I believe Empire Toys, also busy, judging by the photos on their Facebook. But I picked up a few free comics. I'm just looking at the Bongo one, which is the maker of The Simpsons. That's a flip book. Mm-hmm. So it's got a Sergio Aragonese one. It's got a SpongeBob SquarePants, got an Aquaman riff, and it's got The Simpsons on their Bear Patrol, which is quite funny. And it's got a great cover with the comic book guy dressed as Basil Manor of pop culture. Mm-hmm. Kind of, so he's dressed up as Astro Boy and Pinhead, is it, from Hellraiser, and Tintin and Bizarro and Doctor Who and Darth Maul with donuts on his lightsaber. Picked up the Image one, which is, again, is like little kind of previews of all their little of their various upcoming series. The Dinosaurs versus Aliens, which is written by Grant Morrison, and apparently Barry Sonnenfeld, who directed Men in Black and a few other Hollywood films, is going to direct this, but there's not much of an actual story to be told, and it's just got pretty art and some concept sketches. But
how do you feel about all these? We did an episode which kind of addressed this kind of awesome versus awesome,
the mashup versus.
Yeah.
Well, so far there's only, you don't see the aliens yet in this story. You just see the dinosaurs, and it's like set in obviously prehistoric times. And there's a bit of a blurb from Morrison and Sonnenfeld about how Sonnenfeld's idea, and it's being done as a movie and a comic at the same time, kind of thing. But
I don't know why. Didn't Cowboys versus Aliens bomb, like, really badly?
That's exactly what I was thinking. But I suppose, they share one word in the title. But I think to the modern mass market consumer, if they're not excited by Cowboys versus Aliens, Dinosaurs versus Aliens, is going to change their mind. But, Grant Morrison is making, steps towards Hollywood, and perhaps this is the break he's looking for.
But didn't we already have Dinosaurs versus Aliens? It was called Turok, and it was awesome.
That's kind of true. Yeah. It hasn't been a movie, though, but it was an awesome video game.
And it wasn't called Dinosaurs versus Aliens, so stupid idiots didn't rush out to buy it. Yes, I'm calling people stupid idiots for liking something, all right?
And I also read the DC, the New 52, which, most of the publishers, there's like, I think, three dozen different comics you can get, and most of them are new It's yours. So DC have got a couple ones. They've got a family, all mm-hmm. ages one. Dark Horse have got two. Marvel have got a couple, I think. It's Spider-Man, you, not Spider-Man, you one. Spider-Man, something one. Oh, what's the name? Season one, which okay. is the original graphic novel. But the DC one's not bad. It's Geoff Johns, Jim Lee, pretty good art, and a couple of little pages of, yeah, the Earth 2 and GI Combat and whatnot. I mean, they're all basically just free sampler issues, and I think it's free comic. It's a fantastic idea. The first one opened with the first Spider-Man film, 2002, so this one's obviously coincided with the Avengers as well, and the day after May the 4th. Star Wars Day, so it's always the first Saturday of May. So, yeah, it's good to see packed, you know, it's kind of like comics outreach event, I guess, for the year, so it actually makes sense, and it's a good idea because comics is probably the only industry that actually needs to do something like this to get new readers on board.
It's not that good to be packed because today my experience was
by sweaty men in tracksuit pants.
No, I just couldn't get any comics. It was there's several stores in Melbourne which taking part and a couple which didn't. I popped into Minotaur first. They weren't doing Free Comic Book Day. I'm like, oh, those fools! What are they doing? Yeah. I'll come back to this later. And actually heard the guy answering like several phone calls while I was in the store of people asking, are you doing Free Comic Book Day? He's like, no, we're not. Go to All-Star Comics. So I went to All-Star Comics and, people were packed in like sardines. It was like an organized madness. Like everyone was lined up very nicely, but no, you'd have to wait at least an hour to get your free sampler of Archie meets Casper and whatever crappy free comic books they're doing this year.
There's actually a lot of good ones this year. There's something for everybody.
There were some interesting ones that I wanted to grab. I wanted to grab the censored Howard Cruz. That looked really good. Howard Cruz is a he does kind of underground
Stuck
comics.
Stuck Rubber Baby, is that him?
Once more?
Stuck Rubber Baby.
That rings a bell. He does these kind of what's referred to as gay comics, but that's not all he does. So, yeah, and I wanted to grab a few others which looked like fun, but no, wasn't meant to be. There was no possible way to get a comic. It was too packed. So, it's kind of the one store that wasn't doing Free Comic Books Day, Minotaur, I reckon did more business that day than the ones which did because because you couldn't buy anything, like you couldn't get to the counter to pay for anything, and even if you wanted to. So all the overflow from those stores went to Minotaur and bought stuff. So I reckon Minotaur made the right decision on that day.
Yeah, maybe they've done it before and they ran into the same.
Yeah, I reckon that's what they did. It just filled out. I get the it's a long-term strategy. You hope that some of the people who turn up on that day will come back and buy a comic eventually. But I sort of suspect that people just like free stuff. More.
Of course.
Yeah, and they don't want to pay for comics. They want them for free. So, yeah. But if you are, yeah, you won't be listening to this now, but All-Star did some fun artist signings in store as well. So, not signings. They were doing free sketches and everything as well, which probably contributed to the store being extra packed today.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I didn't get to grab the comic about-
Well, you still might be able to. Just- I mean, you're usually, well, I don't know, there's usually some leftover, and just next time you go there, you might be able to ask if they've got any leftovers.
But I don't know, maybe they won't have any extra copies of Elvis Life Story comic, the one I
watched. I actually got that one, Graphic Elvis.
How was it?
Yes, all different interpretations of Elvis Presley.
Because I'd heard he was a huge comic fan, like he had an enormous collection when he was alive, I should say.
Yes, apparently, and his 70s suit was inspired by Captain Marvel. With the cape and the kind of little, yeah.
I never made that connection, but yeah.
No, me neither. But it's true.
How's the comic look? How is it?
It's not bad. It's not within reach now because I'm sitting on my banner, it's on my table, but so I can't reach it or see it unless I use the Force, but I haven't mastered that. But I had a flick through it yesterday, and it's not too bad.
Awesome. So you got all yours yesterday, you scumbag.
Most of them, yes, and some today.
You're that guy who turns up a day early and demands them for journalistic purposes, aren't you?
Correct.
Okay, there's no other news, is there? Let's just start yammering about comics. Let's do this.
Okay, well, I have actually been reading and watching a whole bunch of stuff. I watched Buffy Season 8, the motion comic. I know you're not a big fan of motion comics, but this one's pretty good. I've been meaning to read Buffy for a while. As season 8 is the official continuation after the TV series ended. So it's written by Joss Whedon and most of the TV series writers. And it's actually pretty good. I mean, the voice actors are obviously different, but some of them sound pretty good, like the one who plays Faith, even though it's not Elijah Dushku. It sounds pretty much just like her. But, yeah, you do kind of need to know the TV series, and it's been a while since I watched it. So there's all these characters, and, oh, yeah, there's that guy. And so it probably needs me to, you know, buy the DVDs or whatever again. But, yeah, it's actually pretty good. I mean, and it looks good. I mean, their mouths don't move.
Of course. They just kind of wobble around a bit, don't they?
But it actually looks pretty good. It's pretty smooth, and it's not chunky or clunky. But it does pixelate a bit when it zooms in. But it is one of the best motion comics I've seen.
But what's the point of having them read dialogue and the dialogue's there on the screen as well? It's like one of those little children's read-along books that you buy. With like a Garfield's Grand Picnic, and there's a tape that you can listen to while you read. Turn page now. That's what motion comics remind me of.
Can I slap you now? Or schedule a time later? No, they don't. I mean, sometimes, like when there's captions, they'll do like a voiceover saying the same thing. But when it's dialogue, I mean, there's no word balloons.
Oh.
So there's very few text on the screen.
Oh, good. Okay.
Like a narration, but yeah.
All right, I've been put in my place, I guess.
Yeah.
I watched. Go on.
Did you play Perfect Strangers, the video game?
I did. I thought it was kind of stupid.
I love that, baby. That's gonna start me.
It seemed like it was trying to rip off that that unicorn game.
My life.
Well, Chris will post this on the Exosequential Facebook site. It's a flash video game, basically trying to rip off that unicorn running game where you collect stars and there's this great 80s song playing. And
let me look at the unicorn game. You sure not thinking of Mario Kart or something?
Shut your face. And, yeah, this is...
Oh, look, it was a pleasant 1 minute distraction.
Yeah, it is only like a 1 minute thing, but it took like 5 minutes to load the damn thing.
Yeah, I know.
makes
me miss the old sitcom.
The theme songs are great. There's a guy called Jesse Frederick who is responsible for writing about 90% of the theme songs that we remembered.
Really?
Yes. He wrote the Family Matters theme song, the Full House theme song, the Step by Step theme song, I think. He may also be responsible for the Perfect Strangers theme song. Let me check this.
See, they've got like hope and dream and love and together.
Yeah.
And family, like just throw those words in there. But they're all catchy, you know, like you hear that theme song and then, oh, yeah, Cousin Belky. And
yeah, because he's standing tall on the wings of my dreams.
Yeah, exactly.
It was by Jesse Frederick, the Perfect Strangers theme song. So, yeah, he's your man. I wonder if there's been any compilation DVDs of... See, that's a documentary you and I could make as Exosequential 2.0. 3.0 now, actually.
Yes.
The third iteration.
He probably writes, like, Olympic theme songs now. Like, you know how the Olympic songs are always generic songs about success and reaching for the stars.
Yeah, I can't wait to see CD stores clogged with the single promoting the UK, you know, London 2012 Olympic Games with some little girl. Dame Nikki Webster,
Eiffel 65 or whatever.
Eiffel 65.
Was that a band?
Eiffel 65 or which band did that song, All Rise?
B17?
No.
All Rise.
Blue. It was Blue. Yeah, Blue will be the official band of the 2012 Olympic Games.
I think they were in Eurovision last year.
They were, and I think that's a low thing to do. And speaking of Eurovision, did you get a chance to watch the San Remo Italian Music Festival 2012?
No, that missed my social radar.
It's
is that San Remo Pasta?
Yes, it's sponsored by San Remo Pasta. embarrassing me. It's like Eurovision, but a million times worse and far more awkward. All the contestants, I assume they're contestants. It's not dubbed or subbed. So to the best of my understanding of what was happening, because I don't speak or read Italian, they were all amateurs because they all looked nervous as, and there's one seedy old man who had his arms around the girls all the time. It was kind of an unpleasant, awkward experience. Not as funny as Eurovision, I'll give it that.
Nevertheless, you enjoyed it.
I did enjoy it. Something else I enjoyed. I watched Road to Perdition again.
Yes.
Yeah, I watched it again last night is what I meant to say. Yeah.
Is this on your top five of last week? I don't think it was.
It wasn't. And I wanted to watch it again to see, did it belong there? I'm like, no, it still doesn't belong in my top five. So I just wanted to check. This is the film starring Tom Hanks and Paul Newman and Jude Law. And it's set in 1930s Prohibition era Chicago. Tom Hanks's wife and son are killed by Daniel Craig. I'd forgotten he's in this film. This is before he was James Bond.
Yes.
Before anyone knew who he was. So it's kind of fun. But yeah, the film's great. Paul Newman's last role. And I watched it with my significant other and she cried when Paul Newman died. Even though he's kind of the villain of the piece. Because he's such a nice old man.
Who's a villain.
It'd be like if Stan Lee was shot to death in a film with a Tommy gun. You'd be like, "Ah, Stan."
Yes, I would.
Yeah. And I bring up Stan Lee because that's something that you and I used to always do impersonations of on the show. Can you impersonate me doing my Stan Lee impersonation?
I am Stan Lee.
That was pretty good. You sounded just like me.
Did you read the Archaea Free Comic Book Day issue at all?
I did. That's the hardcover. Like, it's the first hardcover Free Comic Book Day release, as far as I'm aware, which is great.
You are correct.
I'm sure it's one of the ones that got snapped up really, really quickly.
Yeah.
Is that what you noticed as well?
There weren't many copies because I'd imagine they were, because comic shops, they still have to buy these, even though they're cheap. So they don't actually get them for free. But, yes. It would have been quite popular, and it's would have been for the kids as well. So it features six all new stories, full color. It's got, what has it got in there? Millennium, a whole bunch
it's
of stuff.
Got six mouse. It's got Mouse Guard. It's got Return of the Dapper Men. It's got a cursed pirate girl story in there, which I had no idea. Yeah, I had no idea that they were going to be publishing that. So that was great because that's a comic that's impossible to track down now.
Yes. Mm. And a good one by Nate Cosby and Chris Eliopoulos, who does a lot of all-ages art, Cowboy, which is pretty good. It's like this cute, tough kid cowboy who's basically rounding up all his troublemaking relatives who've kind of escaped from the law. I thought that was pretty fun. Labyrinth prequel, Hoggle and the Worm, not featuring David Bowie. I actually watched David Bowie live DVD
did
2004.
You?
I did.
What do you think?
For $10. Yeah, it's good. I wish I could be as cool as him when I'm his age.
He does have a certain old man charm. Yeah, a sexy wife.
Yeah.
Does he?
He's still married to her. What's her name? She was in Star Trek. She's like an Indian model.
In Star Trek?
Okay, Google, come and save me. Star Trek 5. The Undiscovered Country.
David Bowie's wife is what I'm Googling.
Yeah.
It's like the first time in my life I've ever Googled David Bowie's wife. She's a model.
Star Trek 5. She was. She's got one. She's one of those people that has like one name.
Iman?
Iman, that's it.
Never
I was thinking
her.
Imran Khan, but that's the cricketer.
Khan!
Iman, yes. Are they still married? I guess so.
Yeah. I guess I don't really care, to be honest. What's this got to do with comics? Unless if there's a Blue Water comic about the many wives of David Bowie. I'm thinking like a Bluebeard scenario.
Well, I think his first wife bought the rights to Black Widow and Daredevil in the 70s.
Really?
And did you see the photos of those? No.
No.
Shame.
And you know who else tried to buy the rights to Marvel comics in the... Well, this was in the 90s.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah. And he wanted to play Spider-Man in a film.
Oh, no.
Now, I still have...
I'm a swinger, not a fighter.
Yeah, I still can't... Like, once he's got the suit, there's no possible way he would wear a full mask. You know Michael Jackson. He would say, no, I want my ass showing. I want to show my ass. He'd say...
Your eyes or your...
My eyes.
My eyes.
That might have been... the best superhero film of all time. You see how close we are to living in alternate realities, Chris?
Well, and James Cameron actually owned the, well, pitched for the Spider-Man film, and Leonardo DiCaprio was going to be Spider-Man as well.
Originally. Ah, I heard about this one. This reality where Nicolas Cage played Superman in Tim Burton's film,
yes.
Spider-Man starring Michael Jackson, directed by James Cameron, is a reality I want to be a part of.
Well, you should. Did you hear the list of names that were approached for the Superman film, 1978, before Christopher Reeve got it? Muhammad Ali, Clint Eastwood,
Muhammad
Al Pacino.
Ali. Wait, really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
The producer's dentist even auditioned for the role.
Did Harvey Keitel audition for the role?
No, but I think he was going to be Wolverine at some point in the 90s. Because Wolverine originally is short, he's old, and he's muscular. He doesn't look like Hugh Jackman. He's kind of perfect.
Like
a kind of Robert De Niro, Raging Bull era. Or Mel Gibson, I think, was in. I think Mel Gibson was going to be Wolverine, and Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to be Colossus as well.
Yeah, I could see that, especially with his accent. It's kind of meant to be.
Do you still love me? He's made of steel.
And Arnie was obviously meant to play Dr. Manhattan in the aborted early 90s attempt to make Watchmen. Was that the one that was supposed to be directed by Terry Gilliam,
director of
Brazil and Time Bandits?
And 12 Monkeys.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Lots of great films.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been possibly abysmal, possibly amazing. I don't know.
I have also... There's no, I can't segue. The Strange Talent of Luther Strode. Well, I suppose if they made a movie of it, Terry Gilliam could do it. It's a Image comic series.
Mm-hmm.
You heard of this?
No.
Okay, then.
Tell me about it. I'm not telling you to stop telling me about it.
It's a 60 meter series, and this is the trailer. It's got a lot of kind of rave reviews. It's by Justin Jordan and Trad Moore. Justin Jordan, the writer, says mostly it's about power and what happens when you've never had it and you suddenly get it. That's what he says in his introduction. The art is fantastic. It's very kinetic and rather beautiful and distinct. It kind of happens a bit too quickly. Could have done with another issue or two. But basically, it's like what happened if those Charles Atlas ads, like in the 60s, you know, kind of like what Flex Mentallo parody of those.
You've talked about this, but go on. Yep.
Yes. You know, the back of the old comics in the 60s and 70s where the guy's getting sand kicked in his face and then he sends away for a course in the back of a comic, and 6 weeks later, he's a perfect physical specimen. So, that's kind of what this is like. So this guy sends us away and he gets these instructions, and the instructions don't really say what to do, just kind of, you know, unify your mind and your body and your soul kind of in one, and you become, it's called the Hercules Method. So this teenager, he's kind of, I mean, it's kind of stereotypical, you know, it's very Kick-Ass like, you know, he's bullied at school. He's got like film posters and his comic posters in his bedroom. His dad is just got out of prison for beating up his mum. His best friend Pete is a real kind of witty, geeky guy, and he likes this girl Petra and blah blah. So it's kind of like Kick-Ass. But yeah, the main bad guy is called the Librarian, and he's kind of like a Hugo Strange for Batman characters, like bald, bow tie wearing guy, and he kind of is part of this cult that sends this Hercules Method out that very few people can actually tap into it and use the power. So yeah, effectively Luther Strode becomes a superhero pretty quickly. Not a superhero, he doesn't really have a costume as such, but it's interesting, but it's very violent. It's an interesting idea, but it's kind of reminded me of Kick-Ass, I guess.
Does the violence put you off?
No, not really. It's tongue-in-cheek, and it's quite bloody, and the way he sees the world is interesting. Like, he basically just ends up seeing people as meat, so you see through his eyes, and they're basically just, you know, sinew and tissue and flesh and stuff. But, yeah, people get decapitated just by his fingers. You know, people, like, spit their teeth when they're held captive to, you know, shoot guys in the head. And it's all very funny and over-the-top.
We're living in a post-Mark Waid society.
I guess so. It was kind of, yeah, turning back the tropes and the superhero. But it's interesting because, yeah, I mean, yeah, Justin Jordan, again, in the intro, he kind of says the line is blurry between heroes or anti-heroes like the Punisher or Rorschach. What's the difference between them and slasher villains like Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees, you know, from Halloween and Friday the 13th? He says it's a very thin line. The comic doesn't really go as deep as perhaps he would intend it to. It seems it's almost just like an excuse to show lots of violence and blood and eyes popping out. So if you don't like violence or blood, it's certainly not a comic for you, but it's certainly accessible.
If you're reading superhero comics and you don't like violence, I think find another hobby.
Perhaps knitting is for you.
Yeah. I mean, they do center around punching. At the very minimum, someone will get punched, possibly into space or into orbit. You know, depends on the
possibly more than once. And I've also just started reading this week the Daredevil Volume 1 by Mark Waid, as I named again, and Marcus Martin, Paolo Rivera. So this is the six-issue miniseries. And because I think it started last year, so this is effectively a relaunch, I guess, because Daredevil was kind of possessed by a demon and then he was, like, leading the Evil Hand ninja cult, but now he's back. But he was actually outed, Matt Murdock, the blind lawyer, was outed as crimson-clad Daredevil a while ago, so now he kind of has to deny it and, you know, kind of pretend that he's not. And he wants to become a lawyer again, but he's facing difficulty because people say, well, you're a superhero, you can't be a lawyer at the same time, you know, conflict of interest and stuff. So it's actually interesting. Mark Waid, I don't think he's written Daredevil before. He's written Captain America and Fantastic Four and Superman, Spider-Man, but I don't think he's written Daredevil before. But, yeah, he's actually, you can tell that he's thought a lot about Daredevil's origins and his powers and how they work and the people around him, his personalities. Like, you know, how you're writing something and, you know, this character's been around for 40 years. And, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. I've never seen that before. That's where you get the mark of a good writer, that it's not just rehashing the, oh, who's the new bad guy that I have to beat up, and, oh, who's the woman. No, it's actually the way that we see what he sees through the world, like with Daredevil's radar sense, is actually pretty cool. So, it begins with a brief origin recap, and Foggy Nelson is in there, Captain America shows up, Claw, the bad guy, shows up. This is one of those, not as bloody, nowhere near as bloody as Lisa Stroh, but accessible, and it's fun and it's entertaining, like all good superhero comics should be, but very rarely are these days. So, yeah, I really liked it. So, yeah, that's Daredevil Volume 1, the trade paperback is out now. You might even like this, Melody, because it's actually quite well written.
I might have a glance at it. The only Daredevil I've ever read is Frank Miller one. And
Born Again?
No. Yeah, possibly. I can't remember the name of it. I read it when I was a kid, so it's not fresh in my mind. And I remember someone had drawn pubes on Elektra. It was a library copy. I should mention this. and the other one was it Ed Brubaker did some Daredevil?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And what was the status of the pubes?
Yeah, I'm sorry. See, that's a comic story that if we had finished with 89 episodes, the world would not have known this story if we'd finished it like 10 episodes ago.
You know? Well, Elektra is a Greek woman, and you know,
she's a Greek woman.
Some people say Greek women are hairy. I can either confirm or deny that.
Oh, this has gone wrong so fast. It's probably a good time to end it.
What have you been reading comics-wise?
Okay, this week I read a digital comic called The Cartoon Crier. Have you heard of the wonderfully titled The Center for Cartoon Studies?
No. Sounds vaguely familiar. This is in America?
Yeah, it's a school in New York, I believe. I think it's related to you know, the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Art. Mocha.
Delicious. Two of my favorite things, coffee and chocolate.
I know, right? Their idea with this, the Cartoon Crier, is they wanted to do something which was the polar opposite of what we normally call, you know, comics or the funnies, both things that imply, you know, something humorous, full of laughs, a barrel o' laughs, if you will. And what their plan was, I'll read the little blurb here, features the saddest strips from iconic comics like Family Circus, Beetle Bailey, Dennis the Menace, blah, 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 blah. There's a few others. And then there's quite a few guest contributors, including Joseph Lambert, who I'm a huge fan of.
He's the myth hero, myth face hero of a thousand faces guy, no? No, that's not him.
No, that's not him.
That's somebody else.
I Will Bite You. Is Joseph Lambert. Not me threatening to bite you. But no.
Okay, Mike Tyson.
This is free and it's worth checking out. Some of the
Joseph Campbell.
Is that his name? Joseph Campbell?
That's the guy I'm thinking of. I'm sure he's probably dead by now. But he's the guy that George Lucas kind of took a lot from, because he was all about the myths and there you go. He died in 1987. So, okay.
Is this the fellow who decided there's only seven stories in the world, seven basic plots?
And there are no new stories, just variations on a theme. I don't know if that's him. He's the one that basically said all great fairy tales and stuff all have similar things, you know, like there's the the hero journey and there's the wise mentor and and Star Wars kind of takes a lot out of those.
Oh, Star Wars is like, I know he's basically a verbatim example of his, like, I don't know, his generic default story that he sets out in one of his books. So Lucas kept it very closely. You know, there's the mentor, and as you mentioned, and the rogue, and yes, it's. I don't know if I'm already gone a bit cold on Star Wars anyway. So the more I find these things out, it's like that just makes me even more annoyed. But yeah,
you're becoming far too jaded for a man of your youth and vitality. You're going to be a hunched over old man.
My posture is terrible, so it's possible.
I just bought one of those inflatable ball things that you kind of sit on.
Oh, yeah, those are great.
For the core. Yeah, it's been my six-pack is coming a lot later.
Yeah, your core's good.
If I come and visit you in Melbourne, I'm going to take my shirt off and you'll just be amazed.
Don't visit me.
I just sent you photos.
Don't. Although I have noticed your guns, they're blazing.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been working out. Thank you for noticing.
Thank you for noticing. So what was I talking about again? Oh, yeah, this depressing
cartoon
comic.
Studies.
And some of them are, the comic's called The Cartoon Cry. You can read it online for free. Some of them, like, are just, like, depressing, and ones which are, you kind of take for granted how depressing a lot of the punchlines are in some, you know, Saturday morning cartoon comic book, you know, what do you call those, Sunday pages or whatever?
Yeah, newspaper strips.
Yeah, and then when you read them, like, out of the context, you're like, man, that's... If someone said something like that to someone, that would be the most devastating thing you could say. Like, just something like, why don't you just kill yourself? Like, oh, man. But
so these are reprints. They're not original stories.
There's originals and reprints.
Oh, okay.
And some which I'm like, wait, that's Dilbert, but it's not Dilbert. So I'm not sure if there's a bit of play with copyright in there as well. So there's a few genuine ones, and yeah. And there's one where if you want to get genuine tears out of people, hurt a dog. You know, have a loyal dog give its life to save a child. You've got yourself a tearjerker, my friend. You've got yourself Old Yeller.
Yes, which I've never seen. I don't even know if it's on DVD.
Yeah, well, any movie where someone shoots a dog, yeah, it's got to see it. Yeah, that's a tearjerker. But they did bring up something that I thought was interesting. I'll just read this quote.
Okay.
We were noting how the celebrated cartoonists of the past were more like jocks or frat boys, whereas today they're predominantly inward geeks. How did we go from the boisterous extrovert that was Rube Goldberg or Al Capp to the reflective, melancholic loner that is Chris Ware? And it's true. Like, the Merry Marvel lads, they looked like they were having parties at the Marvel offices, swinging. They were one step away from visiting the Hugh Hefner's Playboy Mansion, I'm sure. And now it's either they just seem like sad family men or just depressed, manic depressives. What happened, Chris? What happened?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors, both societal and cultural.
Yes.
I think we have to go back to the work of Joseph Campbell, who you brought up earlier.
Yes.
I think I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But it is kind of interesting how that happened.
It's true.
Yeah, I guess Mark Waid's, even Grant Morrison, who's the closest to a rock star that we have in comics right now, even he's not quite the goofy, I just love to have fun kind of Stan Lee in the 60s. He's more like, I just want to have Wiccan parties or whatever.
Well, I guess after comics became more mainstream.
I want to masturbate on a piece of paper and make a wish.
As they became more successful, I guess they became more businessmen or less of the outsiders, underground type people, and more of working for the man.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
As Dolly Parton says, working hard to make a living.
Yeah. Or
9 to 5.
Yes. Or not working hard at all in some cases. But the masturbating on a piece of paper thing, I didn't just make that up. Look up Grant Morrison, Magic Sigil. Have you heard of this?
I don't know if I want to.
He encouraged his readers, I think in an issue of The Invisibles, at the back, like in the letters page, he encouraged them, I need you all to pray for, I forget what it was, like he needed them to pray for something.
This sounds familiar. I think that was in that Graham Morrison documentary we watched.
That's it. So he told them all to write their prayer on a piece of paper, then masturbate onto that piece of paper. I don't remember if they had to eat it. I don't think they had to eat it. I don't know what they were supposed to do with it after they'd done that and made their wish.
Maybe frame it.
Then mail it to me at P.O. Box for Graham Morrison.
Happy birthday, Mr. Morrison.
Yeah. So, this is true.
I suppose you could save it and then, you know, if you want to, you could clone yourself or something, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Mutagen, a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle-related accident.
Yes.
Perhaps. No, I'm stopping here. I'm not going to go any further with this. What else have you been up to?
The only other thing I have been reading comics-wise is the old Hefty Showcase.
The old Hefty. What are you talking about?
Like someone I went to school with. He always got picked last for basketball practice. The Hefty Showcase presents tomes from the DC do. So Marvel do the same thing, but they're called Essential. But DC, they call them Showcase Presents. They're black and white reprints of comics. And, you know, for $20-$30, and you literally get hundreds of pages of comics from 11. So, and I think this one, Showcase Presents The Spectre, is the biggest one yet. It's only $20 American, and it is, let me tell you, 620 pages long. $20 from
11. That's really long. That's a big comic. Does I know some people aren't keen on these ones are black and white, aren't they?
Yeah, see,
I don't mind.
No, me neither. And I think this is probably the best black and white reprint I've ever seen because the grey tones are really good. Mm-hmm. Are you blowing your nose?
None of your business.
But he got the kettle. The art here is fantastic. Like, don't even notice that it's black and white. The grey tones are really good. So it's kind of like a three-tone book, I guess. But it prints comics from 1966 to 1983 from the pages of Showcase, The Brave and the Bold, Spectre, Adventure Comics, DC Comics Presents, and Ghost. So it's a bit of a mix of all different Spectres. And Spectre is basically God's spirit of vengeance. He's a white guy in green jocks and a cape. And his alter ego is cop Jim Corrigan. Spectre's changed a lot, as most of superhero does. So he's one of those kind of supernatural heroes that's not a traditional superhero as such, I guess. But, yeah, it's really good, and the art's great. As I said, Neil Adams and Jim Aparo's got their early work in here. And it's kind of like creepy or eerie, I guess, in the DC universe, like where the crooks come to a kind of terrible but fitting end. I think you'd like this because it's not – he doesn't really fight supervillains. It's mainly, you know, wizards and dodgy business. You know, it's not very superhero-y. It's like old man with beards and robes, you know, conjuring up some demon in their basement, you know, that kind of stuff. Lots of guys with guns, pulling guns out of their trench coats. And so it's actually pretty good. And apparently when it came out in the 60s and 70s, it pushed the boundaries of the comics code at the time.
Oh, come on.
No, because... Well, I mean, there's no blood in it, but there's kind of interesting stuff, and this is why I say it's kind of like creepy or eerie, because Spectre kind of kills everybody. There's no justice. Everybody. He basically ends up killing all the baddies. So, like, there's one where a baddie gets in a speedboat, and the Spectre turns the speedboat into a giant squid that then eats him. He turns the baddies into stone or melting candles. This guy's, like, flesh is just melting.
We're in Stardust the Super Wizard territory here, by the way.
Yes, good point, that kind of stuff. These baddies are running through a museum, and then the Spectre gives life to these stuffed gorillas. He springs to life and beat them all on the last page.
What are the boundaries of the Spectre's powers?
Well, he apparently didn't really have any. When he first appeared in the, 30s or 40s, he wasn't as powerful, and then he's just got more powerful and powerful over the decades, and it's become one of the most powerful kind of supernatural forces in the DC universe. So, yeah, effectively he's like a god. He can pretty much do whatever he wants, change matter and all manner of things. So, yeah, it's pretty – there's one where there's this, like, greedy criminal. So he gets attacked by, you know, on the American, the dollar bills, they have the, like, the pyramid and the eagle. So he gets attacked by a huge pyramid that leaps from the top of the eagle, comes to life. It's all very – I mean, yeah, Superman – shows up in one story, the Flash shows up in one, Batman shows up in a couple, but mainly it's just him not really fighting traditional DC supervillains, but just kind of bums who wear hats indoors and, you know, just dodgy characters. But, yeah, it's actually really – I mean, they don't make comics like this anymore. And just it's enjoyable, you know. I mean, they're just done in one story. It's not something lengthy. And the art is fantastic. I mean, Neil Adams and Jim Aparo, I mean, that's just great art right there. So, yeah, it's $20 American.
I might grab that because I do like what I've read of the Spectre. I haven't read – I'm trying to remember some names here. Steve Skeets is the only one I can remember off the top of my head, but yeah, this would have been
I think Tom Mandrake and stuff. He had a series in the 90s as well, so he's kind of like one of those heroes like Aquaman or whatever, you know, he's had, or Doctor Strange.
A million different writers on it, probably.
Yeah, and, you know, cancelled series.
But I remember, like, at the late 60s ones I read were very psychedelic, definitely probably a Steve Ditko influence on them.
In terms of...
Yeah, looking a bit like Doctor Strange, really. But, yeah, I know what you mean about the wild justice in there. I remember Spectre's turned up quite a bit. For some reason, Neil Gaiman and Alan Moore love using him in their
comic. Oh, okay.
And it works for theirs because their characters are supernatural. So it makes more sense for John Constantine or whatever to meet the Spectre and go, right on, mate. And then, I don't know, what's something Constantine would say? Caught blimey, you chavs.
Yes, something like that.
Something like that.
I just read the trade paper where he got married, actually, so I kind of want to know what happens next. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Who was the writer on that?
Oh, blimey. Peter Milligan.
Sorry, you did a John Constantine thing.
Peter Milligan, and he married Epiphany Graves, who's like a woman half his age. Because, John Constantine is one of the few characters actually ages in real time, doesn't he? So there's flashbacks, which I think are painted by Simon Bisley, maybe?
Yeah, the character's at least in his late 40s. He's at least in his late 40s now in the comic, isn't he? Yeah. I'm trying to remember, Peter Milligan, of course, he worked on Shade the Changing Man.
Yes, and Shade the Changing Man actually shows up in the trade paper that I read, but I had no idea about the character. Apparently, he's an alien, and he's quite melancholy and seems like a sad, old, mystical, kind of powerful guy.
Who's Shade?
Yeah.
Yeah, he reminds me a bit of Doctor Who, honestly. The crazy coats, like psychedelic coats, the regenerations, because he does kind of change appearance.
Oh, okay.
That's one that I've mentioned on the show before, and I do think it's one of those early Vertigo comics that everyone's kind of forgotten for some reason, but is easily as good as a lot of the Vertigo comics we hold up, like, ooh, wasn't this fantastic and everything. It's probably not exactly on the same level as Sandman and those, but it's at least as good as Preacher, honestly. So, yeah, that's worth checking out, although I think only the first three volumes, there's only been three volumes released in trade paperback form. And that, I think you'd have to have 10 volumes to wrap up the series. So, for some reason, for more than 10 years, we haven't seen a complete trade paperback run of the series. It's a bit shit.
Mm.
Shitty.
Yeah, this year a bit, I don't know what they're thinking using. There's some gold and stuff that they haven't reprinted, but they're getting better at it.
It's strange. Then they keep reprinting the first three volumes over and over and over again. As into like, oh, you must have not got it the first time. Here it is.
That's all that people buy. I don't know.
Very strange.
Apparently the Spectre showed up in the Batman Brave and the Bold cartoon, which I haven't seen, voiced by Mark Hamill.
Cool.
Him of Joker and Luke Skywalker fan.
See, I can't imagine that. There's something so... What could Batman possibly help in that equation with a character who's, you know, basically has limitless powers to you know, punish the guilty? What is a Batarang going to help in that scenario?
I don't know. Once I get to that part, I guess Batman perhaps is solving a crime and he's, like, involved in the occult, and then Spectre shows up to, because, you know, Batman's not known for his ability to battle the supernatural. So
now tell me this, is the Spectre in Justice League Dark of the new DC 52?
I don't believe so, but he was in Shadow Pact, I think, which was the before DC relaunched last year. Shadow Pact was kind of the Magician's Justice League, and I think he was in that.
Probably with Zatanna.
Fishnet stockings.
Yeah, they're quite popular in comics. fishnet stockings.
I mean, they tear at stuff if you're running an alleyway.
I think we can agree that female costumes aren't practical in a superhero comic, so I think that's a given at this point. Anyone who wants to argue gravity otherwise needs to shut their face because you're wrong.
Well, that's pretty much all the comics I've been reading this week. I mean, I've still got quite a few free comic book day issues to get around to.
But, yeah, I've been picking through like little things here and there, like making good use of the library and everything. But there's so many comics, and the more I've noticed that over the last couple of years of doing this show, how many kind of don't meet the grade. Is that are you feeling more savvy, or are you feeling more accepting of?
I'm feeling more. My tastes have changed. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling more like a jaded superhero fan, so very rarely do I read super, like it's going to be something special like Daredevil, mm-hmm. Before I'll be interested, and I pretty much don't read any of DC's New 52 stuff, and that's why I'm kind of getting back into these showcase editions. Like I just also bought the trade of The Walking Dead, mm-hmm. which is like a 1,000-page collection in Volume 1, collects the first 48 issues. I got that cheap. And also
the Omnibus.
The Omnibus, that's the one. Batman, Brave and the Bold, which collects some more Jim Aparo work from the 70s and 80s. But, yeah, I'm kind of getting back into the old stuff, I guess. And
yeah, I've noticed that about you.
Marvel at DC. And really, and I guess Blankets by Craig Thompson was the turning point for me to say, wow, there's really great independent stuff in there. So Fantagraphics, Top Shelf, a lot of Dark Horse stuff.
That's true. Yeah. I reckon if you looked back on the comics you were talking about 2 years ago, I've noticed you definitely have more of an interest in reprints and 60s and 70s comics. I think you were always.
And I thank you. I have you to thank for that as well. You've kind of opened my eyes. You know,
I've become
more sophisticated.
How have I changed?
You've got a beard.
Yeah.
Well, you are like me, I guess. You used to read a lot of superhero stuff. Well, not a lot, perhaps, but a lot more superhero stuff in the 90s growing up, and you haven't really continued to read Batman and whatnot in the intervening years. Mm-hmm. And you tend to, your tastes are even more underground and independent than mine are.
Mm-hmm. I think when we first started doing the show, I was very much still trying to catch up on all the titles that people kept saying, oh, you have to read Sandman, you have to read this. I'd already read Sandman, you know, comics like that.
Yeah.
And now at this point, I'm more comfortable to tell people to shove it. I don't need to read, you know, this comic. I can make my own mind up of what fits into my own canon.
Oh, but it's good to receive recommendations from people.
Oh, no, I still love recommendations, but I'm past the point. Okay, I've read all the basic ones that everyone recommends.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Everyone recommends Preacher. Everyone recommends, I don't know, Why the Last Man.
Yeah, Scout, Scott Pilgrim, Love and Rockets, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and now it's a point where, okay, I've read most of the recommendations, not everything. I'm not the most well-read person. But now it's a point where, like, great, I can discover things on my own now. That's a good place to be.
Yeah. That sounds like the end of a Disney movie. Anyway.
Yeah.
You've been set free from your, like, Tarzan going into man's world. Since it's your Collins song coming up.
Okay. Yes.
Well, I've got nothing else to say, buddy.
Yeah, I'm done. We've spoken enough for 2 years. I am out of breath.
2.5 years. Well, thank you to all the commenters over the last couple of years, those who emailed us, those who have recommended the show to their friends, those who took part in our competitions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you to Maladdin for choosing the music and editing it and uploading and for putting up with my tastes, and it's been a blessing and an honor to work with you, my friend.
Oh, thank you so much. You've been someone who's kind of pushed me into working harder at my journalistic efforts, and I definitely have you to thank for that. And you've inspired me to prepare more and make more notes for the shows and things. Your work ethic has hopefully rubbed off on me.
Oh, ditto. Thank you, sir. And we're both still continuing on with journalistic stuff. So we may continue to still update Extra Screenshot Facebook page every now and then when some big comic news, Stanley dies or something happens.
Look out for upcoming documentary, Thank God It's Friday, The Music of Jesse Frederick.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah.
That's the Perfect Strangers guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it could happen.
You sounded so sincere when you said it.
I know. I wanted to surprise you.
Should we recommend some other podcasts? And
Yes, actually. If this, I've been hooked on this for weeks now. Radiolab. Have you heard of this?
Sounds vaguely familiar. Please explain.
It's a New York-based podcast/radio supported by NPR, which is National Public Radio in the US, and they cover a variety of topics which range from kind of the quirky and interesting to ones which look at kind of trying to dissect, you know, myths about, you know, Robert Johnson going to the crossroads and selling his soul to the devil, trying to track down the origins of that story, talking to a man who has to eat through a metal box, all sorts of interesting stories, and the editing is fantastic. But, yeah, in general interest kind of thing, if you have any interest at all in documentaries or, you know, the world around you, check out Radiolab. I can't recommend it enough. So
yeah. Awesome. We should also thank Sequel Cast, because they have helped us, and you've been on their show as well, so you listen to Sequel Cast. And Luke Milton, who writes and does the Fruitless Pursuits and the Book Was Better podcasts, which are very humorous.
Yes. His recent Indiana Jones episode was very funny.
Okay. Yeah. So, and he joined us for the Star Wars show.
Yeah.
And I was sick or something. Websites, I guess there's obvious one like Comics Alliance, mm-hmm. CBR, I9, I write for Broken Frontier, you write for The Find Bag. Mm-hmm. So there's a wealth of pop culture kind of stuff out there. But, yeah, thank you so much for everyone who's listening, and thank you for, well, everybody that has been on the show as a guest or whatever. And
yeah.
Your feedback.
Thanks to Chris, and yeah, obviously everyone who's listened, and all the people Chris has thanked already. It'd be redundant for me to thank them again.
Once was enough, you greedy bastards. We still have creative aspirations, so you'll be doing your music, and I'll be doing, well, we'll both be doing writing, so
Yeah.
You can use the time wisely.
Thanks, everyone who's followed us, and if this is your first episode listening to us, definitely go back and check out some of the previous episodes we've done. They'll be online, hopefully indefinitely still. So if you miss our voices, check out a previous episode. There you go.
Sounds good. Thank you, Milan, and thank you, everybody. It has been a pleasure to speak to and with you, and whatever good comics you find, may they be ones that you can also recommend. There's a world of good sequential art out there, people.
What he said. Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Bye-bye.
My life, my dream, and nothing's gonna stop me now.